From my stay at the Pines, I learned that a stiff test for friendship is, would she be pleasant to have TB with? Unfortunately, too many people, when you try separating them from their material possessions and any and all activity, turn out to be like cheap golf balls. You unwind and unwind and unwind, but you never get to the pure rubber core because there isn't any. When I started unwinding Kimmy, I found that under her beautiful covering, she was mostly core. She said, "It is not character on my part, Betty. It is just that if you have to have tuberculosis, it is easier to be Japanese." Monday, immediately after rest hours, Kimmy and I were handed a new problem in adjustment. Her name was Eileen Kelly, and she was young and pretty, with very long red hair and very long red fingernails. With disapproval radiating from her like heat, Granite Eyes wheeled Eileen in and helped her out of her wheelchair. Eileen took off her robe, which was pale blue and leaned far from the required warm, sensible bathrobe, and heavily toward a peignoir. She had on sleeveless, backless, black satin pajamas and an anklet. Granite Eyes took her by the bare arm disdainfully, as though she were holding her up in two fingers and disposing of her. Eileen, not at all disturbed, leapt nimbly into bed, but as she slid down between the icy sheets, she let out a yell.
"Jesus God, this bed's cold!"
Like a shout in any empty church, the yell bounced against the walls of the completely quiet bedrest hospital. At once, the charge nurse was projected in the doorway. Eyes flashing, lips stretched tight with disapproval, she demanded an explanation of this very unorthodox noise. Granite Eyes said, rather inanely, we thought, "Miss Kelly's cold." The charge nurse said,
"Miss Kelly, patients of the Pines, do not shout."
She noticed a bare shoulder. Then, turning back the covers as though she were looking for maggots in a sack of flour, she revealed the rest of the bare and satin-clad Miss Kelly. Her nostrils swelled almost to the bursting point. She said to Granite Eyes,
"Miss Murdoch, go to the lockers and get a pair of outing flannel pajamas."
She turned to Miss Kelly.
"Did you read your list of requirements?"
Miss Kelly said that she had.
"Then," said the charge nurse, "why have you come here wearing silk?"
She breathed out heavily as she said this loathsome word so that it came out sahilk.
"Pajamas and nail polish."
Miss Kelly said wisely,
"I don't know."
Just then, Granite Eyes came puffing back with a very ragged pair of blue and white flannel pajamas, which, Kimmy pointed out to us later, had probably belonged to a patient who had died. The charge nurse snatched the pajamas and sent Granite Eyes back for oil of peppermint. Then she removed Eileen from the black satin and stuffed her into the outing flannel with purpose and dispatch. With sharp surgical scissors, which she carried in her pocket, she cut about half an inch from the long, pointed blood-red fingernails, removed the polish from the remaining stubs with oil of peppermint, and informed Miss Kelly that the next morning her hair would be cut to within 1 inch of the earlobe. Her stiff white uniform switched angrily through the door, and she was gone. Miss Kelly sat bolt upright in her bed, a deadly sin, and stuck out her tongue at the retreating charge nurse. Then she turned round, hostile blue eyes on Kimmy and me and said,
"Jesus, what a dame!"
She disdained to communicate further with us until supper time, when she picked up the beautiful thought from her tray and read,
"Intellect is invisible to the man who has none." Now, what knothead thought that up?
She asked no one in particular. When the house doctor and the charge nurse made rounds a little later, Eileen complained of the cold and asked for a hot water bottle. The charge nurse said quickly,
"Hot water bottles are filled at 8:30 in the morning and at 7:15 in the evening."
Eileen said,
"I wasn't here at 8:30 this morning, and I'm cold now."
The charge nurse said,
"Your hot water bottle will be filled at 7:15 this evening."
It was unfortunate that on that of all evenings, the hot water bottle filling should have been assigned to Miss Muleback, who was so slow that even if she had put hot water in the bottles, which she never did, they would have been cold by the time she got them distributed. She threw mine onto the foot of my bed, dripping and cool. I looked over at Eileen. She said a very bad word and threw her hot water bottle on the floor. It lit with a resounding clunk, but Miss Muleback on hot water bottle duty, there were so many resounding clunks up and down the ward, this one passed unnoticed. Eileen waited for a few minutes, eyes on the door, then turned her face to the wall and bawled with loud slurping sobs. I felt desperately sorry for her. I knew how cold, unloved, and unwanted she felt. I knew how hateful everyone at the Pines must seem, but I couldn't think of anything to say that wouldn't sound like a beautiful thought or a quotation from the Book of Rules. Kimmy solved the problem by saying, in her small, sweet voice,
"Eileen, all crying will do is to make your pillow and sheet wet and colder. When Katie, the evening nurse, comes on duty, she will fill your hot water bottle. Don't be sad. We are your friend, and are in sympathy with you."
Kimmy's speeches always sounded as though they should have been on parchment, with a spray of cherry blossoms or a single iris painted across one corner. Eileen coughed hard, without covering her mouth, in fact with her mouth wide open and aimed toward the hall. Then she wiped her eyes on the sheet and turned over. She said to Kimmy, "Why do they all have to be so goddamn mean?" Kimmy said,
"It would be wiser not to talk until the day staff goes off duty. In a few minutes we can exchange confidence without fear of punishment."
When Katie came on duty, she gave Eileen a fresh hot water bottle, some hot milk, and some advice. She said, "We're not trying to be mean to you, honey. It's just that we have a routine and a set of rules, and we have to be sure that the patients conform." Kimmy said,
"What you say is true, Katie, but it is also true that an insensitive person often becomes overbearing when given unlimited authority."
Katie said, "These nurses are mostly just young kids, right out of training. Lots of times when they act mean, they are only trying to obey the rules." I said, "I think that for the benefit of both the patients and the nurses, there should be a short adjustment period. Tossing a normal, fun-loving human being into the Pines and expecting him to blend immediately into the tuberculosis routine is as asinine as tossing a hot-blooded Spaniard into a snowbank in Norway and telling him to, by God, begin skiing and speaking Norwegian." Katie said, "But in many cases, there isn't time. By the time some patients had willingly adjusted themselves, they would be dead." She was probably right, but I thought I had a point, too. Subsequent exchanges of confidences revealed that Eileen was 21 years old, an only child, and an orphan. She had been brought up by her grandma, educated by the Catholic sisters, and employed, since the day she graduated from high school, by a very large motion picture theater as an usherette. Eileen adored her job, loved all moving pictures, read nothing but movie magazines, and was an inexhaustible source of information about all movies and the private lives of the stars. She started the very next morning bringing warmth and color to that cold, filmy period between washwater and breakfast by telling us the stories of movies she had seen. Her mind was as quick as a rocket, and her memory was excellent, but her method of telling and her vernacular made all the stories sound exactly the same. It was possible to distinguish between a tender, delicate picture like Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and a George Raft gangster picture only by the locale. Eileen's antics were amusing to Kimmy and me, but they were not curing her TB, and they were definitely not resting. At first, Kimmy and I pointed this out to her. Her reaction was immediate and violent. She said, "These are my lungs, and if I want to sing with them, or talk with them, or laugh with them, or cough with them, it's nobody's goddamn business but mine, see?"